Welcome to Let's Get Healthy with Bill Swale on Talk 1370. He's here to take your call at 390-1370. And now, here's Bill Swale.
Well, hey, folks, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. And we're going to have a good show today. Dr. Steven Sinatra, a cardiologist. Mm-hmm. We have a cardiologist. They're always interesting, right?
Yes. Well, especially Dr. Sinatra. He has a different perspective than most people are used to hearing.
The myth of cholesterol. The myth. Boy, that's daring, isn't it?
Yeah, well, considering the percentage of people who are on statin medications and who've been told that cholesterol is the greatest risk factor that they have for their heart health.
Well, this may be. He won't have a license. No, I'm just kidding. but I guess he's a cardiologist, so he can probably say things like that. You know, I don't know, but anyway. Yeah. Now, you went to school with the son, right?
I did. I believe this is the same Dr. Sinatra, and his son and I were in the same graduating class at Bastyr University, where we studied naturopathic
A lot
medicine.
Of people don't know. Bastyr is like a medical school for naturopaths.
I'd say it is a medical school.
Oh, it is? Okay. It is a medical school. That's right.
That's right. And it's a different medical school than where, you know, where MDs are trained or DOs are trained. It's got a different philosophy. We do a lot of the same basic sciences. So we do the pharmacology and physiology and anatomy, but we also learn
homeopathy,
herbal medicine, nutrition, a lot of countless hours spent on learning nutrition. And we have a different philosophy. It's really an approach where we really try to get down to the root causes and try to correct things from the ground up so that we're not just kind of band-aiding and masking symptoms.
Well, you're open-minded. Like, energy medicine is really important. I think in today's world of sick care, mm-hmm. we need people into health care.
I agree.
And many times prescription drugs don't provide all that you need for health care. They get you on the road. Mm-hmm. It's like if you had a lot of weight to lose.
Right.
You might want to take some weight loss drug for 30 days, maybe, to kind of jumpstart you. Right?
Right. Well, I think you and I agree there's a time and a place for everything. But preferably, the hope is that we can get people back to a state of health through their lifestyle and through low force interventions so that they aren't having to go on the slippery slope of more and more medications that are interacting and causing other side effects.
Right. That's right. And obesity is a big problem in this country, and diabetes related to that. Metabolic mm-hmm. syndrome, they call it.
Right.
You know, all kinds of things. And we'll talk about that with Dr. Sinatra.
Right, yeah.
Because cholesterol can be considered part of the metabolic syndrome, right?
Yeah, cholesterol, triglycerides. There's a lot of abnormalities that we start seeing in people's metabolism when we eat a lot of refined sugar and processed foods. And so a lot of it, I think, in our country comes down to that combined with inactivity.
Well, if you had a patient that was overweight and they wanted to lose weight, in fact, we may have a weight loss program coming up mm-hmm. here real soon. There are 7 definitions to overeating that somebody came up with. And I wish I'd say it's my idea. It's not. Overeating is not a reward. It's a punishment. Mm-hmm. So when you overeat, even at Thanksgiving, that's not a reward. That's a punishment. Mm-hmm. So if you tend to overeat the next day and the next day and the next day, which a lot of people do this time of year, they gain about a pound or so.
Right, right.
During the holidays, and that's punishment.
Yeah, I think a lot of people gain up to 5 pounds, and they don't lose it. So year after year, that's how they end up gaining 30 to 60 to 100 pounds over the course of 20 or 30 years.
Well, you've gained a little weight. Let's see, you have 3 months, right? 3 months pregnant, right?
Actually, I'm 6 months, so I've got 3 months to go. Yep. So this is one of those situations where we want to gain weight.
That's right. That's right. You got to eat a little bit.
It's kind of fun to be pregnant over the holidays.
Well, something else to think about, folks, is overeating is self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. Self-sabotage. By eating too much, you often feel lethargic, mentally sluggish, and even ashamed of and worthless. So that's not very much fun, is it?
No.
To self-sabotage, okay? And if you don't, that's okay, too. You know, if you don't, I'm not saying everybody feels that way. Emotional immaturity. If you overeat, you know, then that's emotional immaturity.
Yes. Yeah.
They say, you know, it's like.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think for a lot of people, there's a reason why they're eating emotionally. And I don't necessarily know that it's immaturity. It might be that it's a way that they're coping with a problem they're having. And
the stress.
Yeah. Right. So I think there's a lot of dysfunctional ways people cope with things, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're an immature person.
It's arrogant. Gluttony, they say, is arrogant.
Gosh, this is a very judgmental list.
I know. While millions of people in the world are starving, we justify it by claiming there's nothing we can do, so why not consider ourselves lucky and just eat and be arrogant? I mean, that's, people don't think about that. You know, when you overeat, you think, oh, I'm just, who cares about the people that need food?
Well, I think that's oversimplifying what can be a pretty complex mental and emotional.
I think they're just trying to get people to think and maybe get excited about not eating. Overeating is violent. It's violent against your body, which is forced to compensate for the onslaught of food, taxing the tissues and organs to the point of eventual failure. And then you have, you know, that's how you get diabetes, liver, fatty liver. They just found out, for instance, there's two genes in a lot of Hispanic systems, bodies, that disallowed them from eating much sugar at all.
Yeah.
Because when they eat sugar, it goes to form a fatty liver.
Mm. Right, increased triglycerides. And
and that's, fatty liver is not good either.
Right.
Which may explain why a lot of Hispanics sometimes have trouble with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, but it's overeating is a public confession that you lack self-control. I think you go down to some of these places where they have these big buffets, and I won't mention some of the restaurants here in town that do that. So anyway, once again, I didn't write this. I made sure.
I think it's good that you didn't, because I find the list to be a little bit offensive. If you've ever known someone
who's struggled, you'd probably leave the show.
Well, people who've truly struggled with eating disorders where they overconsume, this could be a very shameful.
That's right. I'm glad we don't have any restaurants that are advertising on this show, right?
Well, I think this list could make people feel worse about their situation rather than prompt them to really proactively seek help.
Well, there's some out there that may say, well, maybe I am a glutton or whatever, you know, but, you know, because it's a death sentence. The last thing is, I mean, this guy he's just scaring you to death, I guess. A shocking 18.2% of premature deaths in the United States between 1986 and 2006 were associated with extreme body mass. This is according to a team of sociologists led by Columbia University demographer.
Well, I guess my message would be that I understand where the author is coming from with his points and trying to kind of scare people into looking at their eating habits. However, most people who truly struggle with an eating disorder where they're overeating, it's a lot deeper than that, and that kind of rhetoric can be shaming, which can actually make them just go back to that behavior even more.
Right.
So I have mixed feelings about your list. I think that it's important for people to find support in a supportive environment to help them get over those problems.
You don't get very far by beating people up, do you?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think.
No.
And I think that's maybe the problem we have with the healthcare system if we're not careful. You know, like, we got to make sure we take care of people. And a lot of times people in the health field that work for the government, it's been my experience working with the Crippled Children Organization when I used to work with them closely, that sometimes they don't seem to care like they should.
Yeah.
You know, and they let children suffer sometimes over the weekend because nobody was at the phone at 5 o'clock to give an okay on Monday. It was a legitimate prescription. Well, if we don't take it and okay it, then we're not gonna do anything. So that's when I decided to drop it. I'm not saying maybe they can't change. And a lot of times, people's paycheck depends on not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that?
Explain further.
There are people that their paycheck, if they understand. Especially if they vastly understand.
Oh, right. They wouldn't be able to do their job.
Like, let's say you work for Monsanto, and, you know, there's lots of bad press about Monsanto.
Yeah.
And so, but you don't want to understand all that stuff, that, you know, the things they do.
Or insurance.
Because if you understood, our insurance companies, I mean, like, trillions of dollars they get.
Yeah.
Recently from the government. Because a lot of decisions made by lobbyists, you know, and what have you. So, so I think that it's another negative thought, I guess, basically, but it's but it's something to think about.
Yeah.
And you see somebody that just doesn't seem to, they don't want to understand. Because their paycheck depends on understanding.
Right.
You know, and we're going to see we're going to talk to Dr. Sebring here in a little bit. But he kind of knocks doctors, you know, because he goes to talk to them and trying to get them to wake up, you know, to take care of the patients. And doctors now, the follow-up is becoming a big thing. They got to follow up on patients.
Mm-hmm.
And they're graded by not following up and all that. So where do they get the time? You know, they're not being paid very much anyway. Yeah. In fact, they're reducing their Medicare payments by 24%.
Wow.
So it's if you don't have time, I think doctors need some support. Once again.
Yeah. And I think a big part of our healthcare revolution, which I'm hoping for, is that patients also take that self-responsibility for their own health and they take their health into their hands, which means learning more about nutrition and taking the time, making sure that they stick to their doctor's appointments and that they have follow-up scheduled. So I think there's sort of an old paternalistic model of medicine, but the newer model involves the patients taking more of a driver's seat approach to their own healthcare.
Which is what you encourage too, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So healthcare rather than sick care. We got that down. And that's what we need to do. And that's what this show's about. We give you options and educate you. Because there'll be something you'll learn. I guarantee you, you'll learn from this show. And we got a freebie too. Dr. Nelson has some CD training that you can get online. He'll tell you about that. And he actually, the book that he charges money for, The Emotion Code, he can download it free.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Okay.
And another author coming up the second hour has a freebie, Christmas type of spirit, I guess they got.
Yeah.
So isn't that good?
It's great.
So you got to write a book so you can give away something. You can't.
I know. I'm working on it.
What are you giving away? Just your time.
It's a work in progress.
And your value. That's right. Yeah, you're very valuable. And really and truly, you know, people don't realize how valuable you are and how you, because I talk to patients that see you and they just think you're just a doll. But you really help them. And that's good.
Yeah, well, I love what I do. I feel so lucky to get to do what I do and to just, you know, form partnerships with people and really help them.
And you got a baby on the way, and second baby.
Baby number two's coming along.
Yeah.
So take a few months off, and then I'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're fun to travel with, too.
Right? Same for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, we are going to take a break. By the way, if you want to call in, any questions or anything, the weather is going to be cold again tonight. So be sure and, you know, let your faucets run a little bit, especially the second night.
Yeah,
you might have gotten
cover
by
those
with
plants
it. Turn on your faucets a little bit. Let them drip a little bit, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, especially if you're not going to be home or you're out of town and you leave your heat low, it's good to let them drip so you don't freeze up your pipes.
Well, the outside pockets.
Yeah.
No, sorry. Okay, 390-1370, 512-390-1370. You want to call and just talk to the production man. Not get on there, that's okay too. I know a lot of the shows on weekends are just infomercials and they don't take any calls, but you're welcome to call. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
More of Let's Get Healthy is coming up after these messages on the new Talk Radio 1370. Welcome back to Let's Get Healthy with Bill Swale on the new 1370.
What is the song? They call me Dr. Love? Is that what you
sing? Yeah, I think that's Dr. Amy Love's song. I don't have
you.
A song,
well,
but she, that's her song.
You can't play that with a ukulele very well.
Yeah.
Next time, we'll see if she can do that.
Yeah, she's great.
Let's see. Do we have Dr. Nelson with us? Dr. Bradley Nelson.
Yes.
It's
Hello.
A pleasure.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, you bet. Pleasure. Glad to have you with us. It's really great. Let me talk briefly about the book we're going to be talking about here, because I think people need to know. It's like energy medicine, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, because that's...
energy medicine, yes. Yeah, and, so. You know, the reality is that the human body is made of energy. Quantum physicists have been telling us that now for over 100 years. I mean, if you look at your hand, it looks pretty solid, but if you magnify it a million times, you see you're looking at an atom. And if you look inside that atom, there's really nothing in there but empty space and some infinitesimally tiny energies that are zipping around at the speed of light. Like it or not, that's actually what we are. We're made of those. We're made of energy, pure energy. So yes, many doctors, including Dr. Oz from TV, said that energy medicine is the energy of the future. And I like to add to that that the emotion code is the future of energy medicine because it's so simple and so easy and anyone can do it.
So it's like the future of medicine, right? Using energy.
Yes, exactly right.
Because a lot of people want energy. They want it. They come in the pharmacy and they say, oh, what can I do? I got fatigue. I don't seem to have any energy. Sometimes it's hormones and other things too, but sometimes it's the thoughts, right? Negative thoughts and the lack of decoding your body, decoding your brain. Because you're a chiropractor and you had a mm-hmm. condition really, really serious when you were 13 years old, didn't you? Kidney disease.
Well, yes, I did. I had kidney disease, and I would get pains in the back like I felt like I was being knifed. Pains that would put me on the ground, and my parents took me to the hospital, and they ran all the tests on me, and they said that I had this kidney disease and that it was potentially fatal. There was nothing that they could really do for me. And so my parents took me to some alternative doctors who worked on me, and within a few weeks I was feeling dramatically better. Pains were much less severe, much less frequent, and within about a month or so, I had kind of forgotten that I'd ever been sick, and they took me back to the hospital, they ran the test again, and they said, well, if it's spontaneous remission, it's remarkable, whatever we did must have worked. But I knew that what these alternative doctors had done had actually helped me. And so I decided at that point, age 13, that that's what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be a doctor like that. I wanted to be an alternative doctor. And that's led me down this whole road of finding out all this amazing information about our bodies and how our emotional baggage is actually the biggest underlying common denominator, the biggest underlying cause actually of our diseases and our pain mm-hmm. and our self-sabotage and on and on.
And you worked with computers, and they just weren't mm-hmm. they just weren't challenging for you, not enough. You know, the brain was more challenging, wasn't it, in the nervous system?
Well, you know, what happened to me was I got involved in computers, I got involved in business, and I was about 6 months away from going into the MBA program at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. And I went home to Montana with my wife, and we were sitting around the fire with my father and mother, and my dad all of a sudden, out of the blue, asks me if I have... he said, are you sure you don't want to go to chiropractic school? It seems like a great career, and you've always wanted to do it. And I said, no, I'm going this other direction, because frankly, I had a phobia of chemistry. I was worried about all the schooling that would take and, you know, to go into the healing arts. And he said, well, why don't you think about it one more time? And I said that I would. And that night I prayed about it, and I was awakened three times that night to find my mind full of really happy, warm thoughts about service and helping people naturally and helping people to get well. And the next day I wasn't convinced, and I got on my knees again and prayed about it. And that night I had an amazing thing that happened. I had the same kind of occurrence. Three times I was awakened on that second night, and those feelings of thoughts of service to mankind and humanity each time were geometrically more powerful until the last time that I was awakened on that second night, those feelings were actually just overwhelming. I can't really describe how powerful it was. And at that moment, I actually heard a voice that spoke to me as clearly as anything I've ever heard in my life, and it said, this is a sacred calling. And I knew that was what I was supposed to do. And so I did, got into school, and went through school, got into practice, and during the time that I was in practice for 17 years, I made it a habit to just ask a short, quick, silent prayer for help to our Father in Heaven for each person that I worked with. And nobody ever knew I was doing that. It was just my own little private thing that I did, and it didn't take long. But there were times, especially during the last 10 years that I was in practice, where the information that I needed about a patient would just flood into my mind from up above. And it was an amazing thing. And what I learned was that, among other things, that our emotional baggage that we sometimes joke about is actually the single biggest underlying common denominator for our pain and our illnesses and our depression and anxiety and phobias and panic attacks and infertility and our asthma and digestive problems and you name it. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing to me how much of our difficulties result from our emotional baggage. And our emotional baggage really is what we call trapped emotion. When you're experiencing an intense emotion, you're really angry or you're really depressed or whatever it is, what you're really feeling is you're feeling a specific frequency of energy because the human body is nothing but energy. And so when you're feeling an emotion, well, that's just a specific frequency of energy. Everything is energy in this universe. And so sometimes if that emotion is too powerful, if the anger is too great or the depression is too severe or those feelings of loneliness or sadness are just too much, the energy of that emotion can become trapped in the body. We call that a trapped emotion, of course. And a trapped emotion is simply this energy. It's a ball of energy from about the size of a baseball to about the size of a cantaloupe. And it took me a long time to figure this out, 17 years, really, to figure this out, because you can't see these. They're totally invisible, but nevertheless, they're there. They're kind of like it's kind of like electricity. I mean, we know that it's there, and it does things, and we use it, but you can't see it.
Mm-hmm. So Well, you have spontaneous remission. You never heard that term. And so you went back to see the doctor, you started working on some, and you were healed, right?
I was, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let me tell you another story. This is another, another amazing story that happened to me when I was very young. When I was 7 years old, the first thing that happened to me that really opened my eyes to the possibility of, to the reality of there being a higher power, I was very sick with the measles. And my parents had made a bed for me upstairs in our house in the living room so I could be near their bedroom. And this one night, everyone had gone to bed. And I had overheard my parents talking about the next day I was going into the hospital, into an oxygen tent and so on. And that sounded kind of interesting. As a seven-year-old, I didn't really understand what was going on, but I was very ill. And I remember this like it was yesterday. My parents came into that room this one night after everyone had gone to bed, and my mother said to my dad, she said, "Daddy, will you kneel down with me and say a prayer for our boy that he'll be able to get well?" And so they did. They knelt down by the side of the couch where I was, and my father, I never heard my father pray before that day, I don't think, that I can recall. And he was a great man, but he said this short prayer for me. And as he was praying, I felt this change go through my body, started at the top of my head and went right through my body, whoosh, about that fast, and I was instantly made well. Now listen, when you go from being very, very ill one moment to being completely well in the next moment, you do not ever forget that as long as you live. I'm here to tell you, and I held my tongue until he was done praying, which didn't take long, and then I said, I'm well, Heavenly Father fixed me, I'm better. And they said, "Okay, honey, that's fine. You go back to sleep now. It's okay." They didn't understand, but the next day proved that I actually was completely well. It was an amazing thing. And at that young age, 7 years old, I learned there is a higher power. There is a God up there who loves us and cares about us, and we can ask him for help. So that opened my mind, you see, and my eyes to this possibility. So when I was in practice, I got in that habit of asking for help, and that's what we teach all of the practitioners of the emotion code to do, is to ask for that help, make that connection. With God, all things are possible. And so that's one of the things that we teach, and it's important, I think, because I believe that the highest duty of the healer is to act as go-between for that higher power. And I believe, frankly, that it's the birthright of every single person on this planet to actually be a healer, and it's time now for us to take back that power. It's time for us to take back that ability to heal. There is so much you can do for your husband or your wife or your kids or your family. It's just an astonishing thing, and the growth of this has been so amazing. We now have over 1,200 certified emotion code practitioners in 48 countries around the world, And because this is energy work, it's different from everything that we are used to. Because it's energy work, it can be done at a distance. You can work on someone. If you've got a son, for example, who's in Afghanistan, and he's developing trapped emotions from combat, and that's turning into PTSD for him, you can actually work on him from right where you are in Austin, Texas, believe it or not, and get amazing results. And so most of our practitioners actually have clientele in different parts of the world. So it's an amazing thing. But, you know, with God, all things are possible, and he's actually showing us through a lot of this healing work what can be done and what we actually are capable of. And it's time for us to take back our healing birthright. It's time for us to start healing ourselves and our families, because God needs us to be pure instruments, and he needs us to be rid of our emotional baggage that holds us back, so that we can be better instruments for him to bring his love and his light into this world, which has been suffering in so much darkness for so many centuries. That's mm-hmm. kind of the short of it.
So the body code, and you're about to offer for free, download the book, The Emotion Code, mm-hmm. for free, and also a CD. Is it CDs or DVDs?
There's a website that I have set up. It's a okay. special gift for your listeners. If you go to emotioncodegift.com, you can actually download a free copy of the Emotion Code book. It's the ebook. You can download that for free, and you can also download for free the Emotion Code book on audio. And that's just those are MP3 files that you download to your computer. Then you can burn those onto a CD or put them on your iPhone or your iPod or whatever, and you can listen to those while you're reading the book as well.
Or while you're driving or whatever.
So absolutely.
Yeah, this body code has helped. You've got testimonials on the Internet. If you go to bodycodehealingsystem.com, you've got people that saved their marriage, help you prevent cancer, help you get out of pain, even back pain. Now, how are you going to make money as a chiropractor if you do this rather than do manipulation? So, and then, what would it be worth to do all these things? You can extend your life maybe by 20 years by using the system. And what's all these things worth to you? There's a couple you have here that they worked over 10 years to get pregnant, and they finally got pregnant. They think that that's, or they're pretty sure that. And all this is anecdotal. I mean, we just I'm sure you didn't go through double blind studies to do all this, but it certainly is working for a lot of people, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. The Emotion Code was the book that I wrote that I published in 2007, and it was about a year after that I woke up one morning to find my mind full of instruction from up above, and the instruction was really specific. It was, you need to take everything you know about natural healing, and you need to put it into a self-study course and make it available to anybody, everywhere. And this was absolutely unmistakable. And I remember thinking, "Are you sure about this? Because this is really going to be a lot of work." And it was. The first version of the body code took me a year to produce. And of course, this is a whole self-study course. It's got DVDs. It's got manuals, it's everything. And I'm telling you, if you want to buy somebody a Christmas present that can literally change the whole course of their life, as well as the lives of countless other people, this is the Christmas present to buy, or for yourself. It's we call it the ultimate health, wealth, and relationship solution, because, you see, why do we get sick? Why do we have problems with our relationships? Why are we unhappy? And why are we broke? And the reality is, there are reasons behind all of those things. And sometimes it's surprising what it can be. But the body code helps us to figure out what those things are and clear those things out of our lives, so that we can really become who we were intended to be. I believe that God wants all of us to have love. I think he wants all of us to have abundance. I think he wants us to be better instruments for him. And, you know, I'll tell you something. I believe that this world is changing. It's in the process of changing right now. I think that there's a tremendous transformation that's going on in this world. People's eyes are being opened. People's minds are being opened. Their hearts are being opened. And this work, the emotion code and the body code also, are really, I believe, at the forefront of this change, because these methods make it so simple for anyone to start changing their own life from the inside out. It's an astounding thing. See, basically what the body code is, it's a self-study course on energy healing. It's the most advanced self-study course that exists in the world. And how it came about was during all those years that I was in practice, that I was constantly praying and asking for help, what I learned was that the reason why we have symptoms and disease is because our bodies get out of balance in six key ways. And what I found is that we can ask the subconscious mind, and that subconscious mind, which is really just the spirit that is within you, that intelligence below your conscious level, that subconscious mind knows exactly what's wrong with you. I mean, if you've got some kind of a low-grade infection in your body, that subconscious mind knows it. And in the body code, you can ask that and you can figure that out. If you have some kind of a nutritional deficiency, well, your subconscious mind will know it and you can figure it out. If you've got some kind of an inherited emotional energy from an ancestor, you can find that out and you can fix that. And so there are lots of different ways that we can become imbalanced, but the body code helps us define all of those. So, yeah, I would encourage people to go there as well. The website's bodycodehealingsystem.com, and the other website is emotioncodegift.com. And at emotioncodegift.com, you can actually for free, you can download the Emotion Code ebook, because we want everybody to have it. We don't want there to be any kind of a financial barrier in the way of people being able to read this book and actually start implementing this in their lives.
Well, and then
you get the audio too. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's just a little tough for a lot of people to grasp, you know, what you've just said. There's a lot. It's because you're dealing with kinesiology, you know, your muscle testing. So you train people on how to do that. So I think that, and the biggest thing about this, when you purchase something, it's a money back guarantee, right?
Oh, absolutely. We have a 100% money back guarantee. If you're not absolutely thrilled, you can send it back within 30 days, and we'll give you all your money back, no problem. Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to mention something that intrigued me about the book is you can also apply the techniques to animals. A lot of people have pets who are rescue animals or had some other sort of history where they might have had their own stressors, emotional stressors that might lead to issues that are troublesome for the pets and their owners. So I thought that was really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
yes, absolutely. We've seen some of the most amazing things happen with animals. And, you know, animals have emotions. It was a surprise to me. I grew up on I grew up in Montana, and we had a ranch. We had 50 head of horses. And I never would have occurred to me that horses have emotions, but one day I was asked to go and work on a horse that had a problem. It was urinating in its stall all the time, and they'd had a couple of vets look at it. Nobody could figure out what was wrong, but all the other owners were upset, and the other horses were probably upset too. And I look at this horse and did some checking on it, and couldn't figure out what was wrong with it either. And my wife said to me, she was there with me, she said, "Well, maybe it's emotional." And I looked at her, and I laughed. I thought she was joking. And she kind of just glared at me, and she said, "Just check." And I realized she was serious, you know, so I did, and it was. And it was the most amazing thing. And I'll tell you, I had, we were able to fix that horse in short order, dried it right up. In fact, one of my favorite stories that I heard just recently from one of our practitioners, that she was called to go and work on a little dog that had a problem about a year before. This little dog had run into the house, and the floor had been waxed, and it couldn't get its footing, and it slithered across the floor, and it ran into a really sharp object. It was injured, and it ran right back out. Now, this is a little indoor dog that became an outdoor dog, because that dog would not set foot in that house no matter what they did. They tried bribing the dog, and they tried tricking it, and whatever. Nothing worked, and so they finally called this emotion code practitioner. She came over and checked the dog, found a couple of trapped emotions, and released those emotions really easily. And we explain all of this in the book. Anyway, how to do it, and anyone can learn to do it. And the dog just kind of sat there for a couple of minutes as this woman was talking to the owner. And then the dog suddenly got up and just walked right into the house. And so,
interesting. Well, even dogs have baggage, though, right?
Yeah, you know, they do. Animals have baggage, and it's amazing what a difference it can make. And the beautiful thing with working with animals is that there's no placebo effect. They just get better.
Right.
And proving that it works.
Right, exactly. They don't know what's going on. Right. Well, good. EmotionCodeGift.com. That's your holiday gift, I guess. How long would that be going on for through the end of the month?
Oh, that'll be up. That'll be up at least through Christmas. If you're looking if you're looking for a gift to give somebody, you know, you can give them an electronic gift. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could just give everybody on your list a copy of the Emotion Code ebook, and your shopping's done.
There you go.
Sounds
and this
like
cost
a great
me
gift.
Thousands of dollars to get it.
That sounds like a great gift. And is there a list somewhere available for practitioners? You mentioned you've trained other practitioners. Is that available on your website?
Yes, absolutely. If you go to, if you're looking for somebody to work with you and help you release your emotions and take down the wall, of, that energy wall of trapped emotions around your heart that we call the heart wall, you can go to healerslibrary.com. Healers Library is H-E-A-L, of course, healerslibrary.com, and you can click on the Find a Practitioner button there, and you'll see a map will come up of the whole entire world, and you'll see people all over the world, and you can just go through that list and see who you feel inspired to connect with, and you can work with that person, and the beautiful thing about that is you don't have to find somebody right there in Austin. You can find somebody that maybe the person that's just right for you is in New Zealand or maybe in Hong Kong. I mean, it doesn't matter because work is done at a distance, and it does work. It's amazing.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Bradley and Nelson. And
ditto, thank you.
Yeah, you've got a great program, and thanks for offering this to people so they can try it. I think it's a great.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas to both of you and all your listeners as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You have a great week next week, too.
Thanks. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so let's take a break. You got any questions about this? We just covered 390-1370, 512-390-1370. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Let's Get Healthy with Bill Swale on the new 1370.
Welcome back to the show. And I think we have Lori Anderson on the show right now.
Yay. Hey. One of our favorites. Hi, Lori.
Hey, Amy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Y'all know each other?
Oh, we've met a time or two. I see her every now and then, like every
y'all
week
both,
or so.
Yeah, you both work at the South Lamar store.
That's right.
In fact, you're working there tomorrow, aren't you, Lori?
I am. I'll be at South Lamar tomorrow from 10 to 2.
Yeah. So if anybody's got, we're talking about gout today, which you can do with gout, very safe. Extremely safe way to treat gout, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have too many good remedies for gout in homeopathy. And so I'm just going to talk about some of my favorites.
Two or three.
And yeah, okay. And you are absolutely right that it's very safe. Homeopathy is really effective. And... you know, the way we're just talking about Lori's favorites may not be the most effective approach, but the good news is if you try one of my favorites and it's not the right one for you, nothing bad's going to happen. It's just nothing's going to happen.
Well, that's true.
Which
I mean,
is
okay.
A good risk to take.
There you go.
Yeah. You either feel better or nothing happens.
Amy Tyler is 6 months pregnant, so she could take Nux Vomica, for instance.
Yes, she could.
There you go.
Right. That's,
she could take any of the remedies we're going to talk about today or any legitimately homeopathic preparation.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
One of the many reasons why we love homeopathy.
That's right.
So besides cherry juice, the tart cherry juice, which a lot of people take, you know, for the pain and all, that's not bad, is it? Tart cherry juice. But let's talk about something that's probably cheaper and easier to use.
Right.
That works also. So let's start with Nux Vomica. Is that what you'd like to start with?
Nux Vomica is absolutely one of my favorites. Gout itself is a digestive problem, even though the symptoms show up in the extremities. It's a digestive issue. And so In homeopathy, we're going to be able to sort out which remedy is the one for a certain person based on that other constellation of symptoms. And so Nux Vomica is a remedy which is good for excess. So maybe you got kicked up after you ate a little too much or drank a little too much celebrating Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an indication maybe Nux Vomica is the right gout remedy for you. Also, Nux, we know Nux sometimes by its personality type. Nux Vomica is a, quote, type A personality, somebody who's driven, focused, a successful overachiever. That's the kind of person who Nux Vomica works really well for. So if that sounds like you, Nux would be a good try.
Okay.
The next big one that I like is Lycopodium. Lycopodium has, every Lycopodium I've ever seen, has digestive disturbance and a craving for sweets. They also tend to be, you know, what we call in homeopathy, inflated. They have a lot of gas, which is going up or down. But they also kind of have a little bit of an inflated ego. They think really well of themselves.
And that's like a podium. So like a politician.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a lot of hot air in multiple areas of the body.
That's right. You know, and if you are old enough to remember what Bill Clinton looked like as a younger man, he had those parallel lines across his forehead. We look at him now and we know that they're wrinkles, but back then they looked kind of like parallel lines across his forehead. If you have those, you might think about Lycopodium.
Interesting.
Is that L-I-C or L-Y?
L-Y-C.
L-Y-C-O-P-O-D-I-U-M?
That's right.
Lycopodium. Okay.
And
well, he liked to get behind podium, didn't he?
Well, you know, he did like to get behind all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into that.
And we all like to hear him talk. So yeah. I guess that speaks to the airiness.
Yeah, there you go. Very confident.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If I could talk about one more,
let's
I would talk
that.
About colchicum, which is the homeopathic remedy of the plant that many of the conventional medications try to mimic. And this is when your gout is kind of a tingling pain. And it's especially in the small joints of the body. And the pain, it's common in gout that the pain and the inflammation may move around. If you need the remedy colchicum, they're going to go from left to right.
Colchicum, how you spell it?
C-O-L-C-H-I-C-U-M.
Is that from colchicine?
Or that's where colchicine comes from?
It's from the plant.
Okay.
Colchicum, I believe, autumnale.
Mm-hmm.
My Latin and what it used to be.
Right.
But I think that's how you say the second word.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is, it's what the conventional medications are trying to mimic.
Okay.
So when I say pains go from left to right, you know, it starts in your left foot, then tomorrow it's in your right foot.
Well, now Lyme disease does that too.
Well, there are lots of things that move around.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
But it's common that gout might do that. And okay. If you need colchicum, that it's probably going to go from left to right.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, it might also be starting your small toe and move, you know, through your toes one by one, left to right, in your big toe.
By the way, folks, your fees are very low. You know, for an hour or something. If you got something you want to know more about this, it's a great training tool, and it's a great way to another example of what we're about, where people need choices, don't they?
Absolutely.
And this is a choice you can have for treating any condition, just about. I'm trying to think of something you can't treat it with.
Well, homeopathy can't do surgery.
Well, won't you work on that for the next show?
In my spare time.
Because I might have an appendectomy need here pretty soon. So anyway, so Nux Vomica, Lycopodium, and Colchicum. Colchicum. Okay, I left the C out. Colchicum, there we go. Okay, so how can they reach you?
They can reach me at my practice, 512-707-0077, through my website, austinhomeopath.com, or at People's Pharmacy. I will be at South Lamar tomorrow, and I'll be at Westlake Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Okay. Just call the stores. They can let you know and go by and visit with you. And then you have a private practice, too.
If
you
I
want
do.
To go to that. So just a one-stop shopping for anything, whatever you need.
Yeah, you know, come on in and talk to me. We'll, you know, we'll get as far as we can on the People's Pharmacy clock. And if you need to make an appointment and sit down for an hour, we can arrange to do that, too.
Okay. What a blessing you are for Austin. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you
thank
so
you,
much,
Lori. We always enjoy your clinical pearls.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay.
And I hope you two enjoy being inside the radio studio on this chill evening.
Be sure, be sure and drip your water because it's going to freeze tonight, I think.
I don't think it's ever gotten, I don't think it's ever stopped freezing from yesterday.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, but you can still... If they're not dripping, pour some water on it, and they'll start dripping.
Yeah, dripping water is the way to go, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, Lori, thanks again.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so coming up, the great cholesterol myth. This is a cardiologist saying there's a cholesterol myth. Now, how crass is that?
Very intriguing.
Does he know what he's talking about? Of course he does.
I think he does.
Yeah, something to think about. Right.
Okay. Interesting ideas.
We're going to take a break here for a news break, about 5 minutes or so. 390-1370. This is Bill Swale, and this show is sponsored by People's, Austin's favorite pharmacy. When you say that, Dr. Tyler?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And Dr. Tyler is a, we just throw that out there, but Dr. Tyler is a naturopath. We have a rogue nutritionist. I'm not sure what's a rogue nutritionist, but that's all right. He'll tell us. Johnny Bowden?
Hello.
Did I say the name right, Bowden?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, how you doing? It's a real pleasure. I can tell looking at your website that you you work out some.
A little bit, yes.
That's good. That's good. That's great. What a great book you have here, The Great Cholesterol Myth. Why lowering your cholesterol won't prevent heart disease and the statin-free drug plan that will.
Uh-huh.
And this doctor... Boy, he's bucking the system. Hope he can keep his license. I'm just teasing. You know, that he's a cardiologist, right? You wrote the book with the cardiologist.
I'm sorry. I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you. Are you asking me about Stephen Sinatra, the cardiologist who
right.
wrote the
book? Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Bill, I'm on the line, too. Hi, I'm Dr. Sinatra.
Oh, good, good. Okay.
Hi, Johnny. How you doing?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, well, we just got I've got a naturopath with me today, Dr. Tyler. So we got a four-way – boy, this is a committee.
That's right. And actually, I believe, are you Drew Sinatra's father?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, we graduated the same year from Bastyr University.
Oh, great. I'll tell him, Amy. I'll tell him you're on. I was on a show with
you. Yeah, so it's fun to have you on, and I've followed your work for a while, and I'm a big fan, so it's great to have you guys on the show, and sort of a revolutionary idea for a lot of people who are used to being told their high cholesterol is a major health risk.
Thank you, Dr. Tyler. It's very nice to hear.
Yeah, it's people. You need to get this book and learn about it, because when you say a myth, cholesterol myth, you know that's boy, you're going against the grain, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in fact,
no pun intended, by the way.
I mean, I can tell you, even my 40 years of being a physician, or actually longer, I always believed that cholesterol caused heart disease. I mean, it was amazing for two decades, from 1972 to actually 1993. And after I've done thousands of cardiac catheterizations and angiograms and seeing lots of patients, I was really shocked because sometimes I would see patients with cholesterols of 300 or more, and I'd expect to find disease, and I found normal coronaries, and I saw the converse. I saw people with cholesterols of 150, 160 with chest pain, and I expected to find nothing, and I saw disease. So I have to tell you, I mean, I used to be the choir boy for cholesterol, but I've changed my views, especially over the last 2 decades.
Well, I'm a pharmacist, and I can tell you that if we give somebody in their 80s a statin drug, the next day they can't even walk across the grocery store without getting lost or something.
Well, and you know what? It's interesting you say that because I'm a tennis player, and I play every day, and I play in different leagues, and I play with a lot of guys in their 70s and 80s who have been playing for 36 years together. And a lot of these guys are at very low risk. They're in good shape. They exercise every day. They're not overweight. They don't have other risk factors. And their doctors are consistently putting them on statin drugs. And these guys are over 75. And every one of them has muscle pain. Every one of them has shortness of breath. And every one of them doesn't believe it has anything to do with the statin drugs, nor do their doctors. And, you know, we, Steve and I, are not anti-statin. We're anti-overprescribed statins. And one of the populations where you definitely don't need to be on statin drugs is elderly people or people over the age of 75. And Steve can talk about some of the other populations that probably don't need to be on statin drugs. But putting an 80-year-old man in good shape on a statin drug with no other risk factors or even with other risk factors seems to me to be sheer folly.
Mm-hmm. I had a Dr. Astronaut on the show a few years ago that was on, he was retired. And he was on statin drugs, Lipitor, I believe it was. And he had global amnesia in his backyard. He didn't know who his wife was. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know that was one of the side effects. It was buried someplace, maybe in all the lists.
Well, now, transient global amnesia is rare, but it does happen. And there's a famous NASA scientist named Dwayne Graveline, who we talk about in the
book.
He's
the one that was on there, right. Mm-hmm. Dr.
Graveline. I'm sorry?
Dr. Graveline was who it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who's exactly, we talk about him in the book. He's a very notable case of that, an example of that. Doesn't happen all the time, but there's a lot of side effects to statin drugs. But I think the more important reason is, why are we putting them on this? We're putting them on this because we've collectively bought into the myth that lowering cholesterol is the same as lowering the risk for heart disease, and they're not the same thing.
And can you tell us, Dr. Sinatra and Dr. Bowden, what would you consider to be the main risk factor? So if it's not cholesterol, what are the factors that would make someone more likely to develop heart disease?
Well, I mean, we talked about this in the book, and this has been my clinical experience over the years. I mean, inflammation is really the root cause of heart disease. And if you look at what are the major causes of inflammation on the heart, I mean, I would say, you know, excess sugar in the diet, certainly trans fats, which, you know, we're doing a fair job of being on the outlook for those. But then a lot of us are still ingesting a lot of the omega-6 oils, which are highly inflammatory. Mm-hmm. So I would say those are much more important to consider than high cholesterol. And I think Johnny would agree.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
So diet and exercise.
Steve and I got into this sort of from different portals, if you will, and we wound up in the same spot. But my interest in this started because I was a personal trainer before I was a nutritionist. In the 90s, I worked with hundreds of clients for weight loss and diet, and you know, they were all told not to eat fat, not to eat saturated fat in particular, but any kind of fat. And really, the only reason anybody has ever been told not to eat saturated fat or to avoid animal products is for one reason only, because of the belief that saturated fat always raises cholesterol and therefore raises the risk for heart disease. Well, that turns out not to be true. And if it turns out not to be, if cholesterol is not the cause of heart disease and not the be-all and end-all, the most important molecule we should be focused on, well, then all those dietary recommendations kind of collapse like a house of cards.
Right.
And the latest research is very clear when they look at saturated fat in the diet and the incidence of heart disease, and they just correlate those two things, there's not a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The saturated fat has pretty much been vindicated as a cause of clogging up your arteries, as we all think of it, because that's just not what happens.
Well, now we know this great saturated fat called coconut oil.
Coconut oil, Malaysian palm oil, butter even, grass-fed beef. You know, the saturated fat from whole natural foods is not something we need to fear. Trans fats, different story. Sugar, different story. But, you know, it's more than a coincidence in my mind that the whole epidemic of diabetes and obesity really kind of happened coincidentally as we started taking animal fats out of the diet, replacing all of that stuff with quote-unquote complex carbohydrates and lots of vegetable oils.
So in your, I guess one thing that listeners might be curious about is if we're not going to look at cholesterol as a good benchmark for cardiac risk, would we look at things like C-reactive protein, which is a marker of inflammation, or triglycerides, which is a marker of possibly storing too many of these simple sugars as fats? What are the main, and in terms of patients wondering, well, what can I do to assess my risk then? What do you think the main helpful diagnostics are?
You know, as a clinical cardiologist, a C-reactive protein is a good place to start because patients can ask their doctor, and it's a very simple test. It's very inexpensive. And it shows if you have silent inflammation. Now, if you take that a little further, you mentioned triglycerides. You know, we're in an epidemic of metabolic syndrome right now, especially with kids and young adults, where overweight status is becoming more and more the norm in our society. So what really frightens me is when you see these children, young adults, even adults who have, you know, high triglycerides, low HDLs, a little bit of fat around their tummy, and, you know, borderline or elevated blood pressure, you know, that's the markers of metabolic syndrome. It's a highly inflammatory disorder, and these people do very well. They have lots of internal inflammation. A lot of them, indeed, have high C-reactive proteins as well. So those are good tests to ask your doctor, to just to make sure that, you know, you're not harboring that syndrome, because that's a ticket to heart disease.
Right. And how do you feel about the rapid CT scan where they take a snapshot of how much calcifications in the arteries?
You know, if you do the calcification scan and you're just looking at the heart, I like it. It's an EBCT scan. I mean, the only downside is about 6 minutes of radiation. But the upside is you will find out if you have calcification of the arteries. Because remember, calcification does not belong in the arteries. In other words, we should all really have zeros.
Right.
But if you have a calcium score of over 1,000, that is not a good situation because, you know, usually scores of that high will, these people will face an event. Like a heart attack or angina or any heart related problem, usually up to about a third over a 2.5 year period. So higher calcium scores, particularly those over 1,000, do disturb me.
Okay, so you do think that can be a valuable tool for people?
Yeah, total body scan. However, no,
yeah.
Too much radiation.
Right.
Way too much radiation.
Yeah.
In case you're just tuning in, the great cholesterol myth. The great cholesterol myth, and why we put too much emphasis.
Can I add to that, Steve? You know, talking about tests, you know, one of the points we make in the book is not that cholesterol is completely irrelevant, but we're really measuring it in old-fashioned way, and there's a lot of things you can measure about cholesterol. Now, very, very fast summary. Back in the 60s, you went to a health fair, you get your cholesterol measured, they take a little prick of blood, they say, Mrs. Jones, your cholesterol is 190, or Mr. Jones, it's 240. You got this one number. Then in the early 60s, they began to pay attention to the fact that cholesterol traveled in the blood in two different packages, HDL and LDL. And because they kind of functioned differently, we kind of gave the HDL the name the good cholesterol, and we gave LDL the name the bad cholesterol. And that was an improvement over total cholesterol. But we're 10 years or more behind the times. We now know that there are four or five different kinds of HDL. There's HDL-2, there's HDL-2A. There's several different kinds of LDL, most notably LDL-A and LDL-B. These do not behave the same in the human body. They don't even look the same under a microscope. The LDL-A molecules are big, fluffy cotton balls, and they don't do a lot of damage. And the LDL-B molecules are these nasty little, Steve calls them angry molecules. They're very inflamed, very oxidized and damaged. And the newer tests will not only tell you what type of cholesterol you have, is it LDL-A, is it LDL-B, and these are very different things. It also tells you the number of particles, and the number of particles is a better predictor of cardiovascular risk than the total amount of LDL. In fact, when those two numbers are in different directions, like you have high particles and low LDL, you will miss risk if you only look at LDL. And conversely, if you have high LDL but low particle numbers, you're going to be treated needed for something you don't have. So we need to use them. If you're going to get a cholesterol test and factor this into your risk profile, for God's sake, ask your doctor for the modern one that looks at particle size and number. Would you agree, Steve?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And
remember one thing. The most virulent type of cholesterol particle is the LP little a, which is a very, very small, very inflammatory, what we call arthrogenic particle.
Right.
So that's included in those cholesterol fractionization tests as well.
Is that like the Berkeley Heart Lab?
Yeah, Berkeley Heart is
one of them, yeah.
NMR, LPP.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like alphabet soup,
yeah.
but they're all good. And they give much more information than just a total cholesterol or an HDL mm-hmm. or LDL or a blood sugar.
Okay, so those sorts of more in-depth, more
absolutely.
Detailed
but
tests can be
you've
helpful.
You've got most of the doctors in America who are simply looking at the LDL number and writing a prescription, and that's treating a number, not a patient.
Right. Well, also it seems to me that the numbers have gone further and further down as the years go on in terms of what they consider to be the healthy threshold, and sometimes they're applying numbers for healthy people that have no other risk factors that should only be looked at for people who have a lot of risk factors. So, for instance, they're saying the LDL has to always be under 100, even though this person doesn't have high blood pressure, they're not overweight. Whereas there might be a different scale that would apply to someone who doesn't have any of the risk factors.
Well, I mean, Johnny and I believe that that's, you know, pharmaceutical propaganda, and there's been studies on that. And basically, you know, we're trying to get people away from that because... I mean, we believe in treating patients, not in treating numbers.
Right.
And, you know, the ENHANCE study, if you look at what ENHANCE did, where they drove LDL down into the basement when they used two drugs instead of one drug. And if you look at what happened, and by the way, that data was withheld from the medical community for 2 years. These people who had very low LDLs was just driven way down. The incidence of carotid disease or coronary artery disease went up because when they checked their carotid arteries, they had more thickening of what we call the internal media of the carotid. So we feel that the ENHANCE study would put a tremendous nail in the cholesterol coffin as the etiology of heart disease.
And what people need to remember also is that low cholesterol is a huge risk as well. If this is a kind of a J-curve, people continue to have this notion that with cholesterol, the lower the better. But when you get down into these low numbers, you see an increase in mortality from all kinds of other things other than heart disease. You see an increase in mortality from accidents and from suicides. Now, why would that be? Because cholesterol is vitally needed for the brain.
Right.
And when you aggressively and myopically and obsessively go after this molecule, ignoring everything else, you're just lowering something that the body actually needs to fight infections, for thinking, for your sex hormones. I don't think it's a coincidence that you've got half the middle-aged men in America on statin drugs, and you also have a huge epidemic of erectile dysfunction.
Right.
These things are related. Because cholesterol is the parent molecule for your sex hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So this aggressive lowering, just be damned with the results, just go and lower the cholesterol as low as you can, actually has a number of very negative collateral damage, if you will.
Right.
Well, you need cholesterol for your brain, for sure, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You need it for neurotransmitter function.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of patients I work with, they're surprised to learn that cholesterol actually has these vital and beneficial roles in the body, that it's used as a building block for hormones and even things like vitamin D. So I think it's been vilified.
Well, there's some new guidelines they came up with a few weeks ago about cholesterol, which I think was what you're talking about a while ago, alluding to, about how they're lowering it, and they're telling doctors now just, you know, check the number and just put people on cholesterol-lowering drugs, you know, like a statin drug. And the doctors, a lot of doctors rebelled against that. They didn't like that because they also realized now that exercise, diet, these other things are important. But the study just says just put them on statin drugs.
Well, the funny thing about that, everybody read about those new guidelines from the American College of Cardiology and the American Medical Association, and got tons and tons of press, front page press. What didn't get any press, or it got page 18 in the New York Times, and I was sharing this with Steve by email the other day, in those guidelines they have a calculator. And one of the guidelines is if you have more than a 7.5% risk, you should be on a statin drug, according to this calculator. Well, the part that didn't get as much press, the kind of like when you put a retraction, they don't print that on the same front page, is that the calculator overestimates risk by between 75 and 150%.
Oh, boy. Doesn't sound
between
like a very good
75
calculator.
And 150% overestimation of risk. And they said, when this was pointed out, they said, oh, whoops.
Wow.
But we didn't hear about that, did we?
No.
It's disturbing.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'm curious about, Dr. Sinatra, I noticed that you are an assistant professor at UConn. Actually, I'm from Connecticut as well.
Right, yeah.
So I'm curious, how is your message received by colleagues and medical students? Is it something, do you feel like there's an increasing appreciation for your message, or are there still a lot of resistance?
You know, there's still a lot of resistance. I mean, you know, medical students are being educated still today that, you know, cholesterol is a major risk factor. And, you know, even when Johnny and I were on a Dr. Raj show, we got a tremendous pushback from doctors in New York City. So, I mean, it's still out there. And, you know, the amazing thing is the fact that there are so many clinical studies out there, but a lot of the clinical studies have been exaggerated. They've been flawed. Even this enhanced study I just talked about, the information was withheld for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the studies are negative studies and are not even reported because they don't really uphold the pharmaceutical agenda.
Right.
So what's happening is that, you know, proponents and opponents of the cholesterol theory, they fight one another, and they're cherry-picking studies to fit their, you know, their conclusions. It's like opposing lawyers in court. I mean, here's the truth. Here's the bottom line. And I think Johnny and I would agree. We would use a statin in any male under the age of 75 with proven coronary disease, and get ready for this, regardless of the cholesterol. I mean, we believe that statins have a bright side, and it happens to be in men. And in all the clinical studies where statins have shown improvement, it's been in high-risk men, like, for example, the West of Scotland study where they took smoking men with low HDLs.
Mm-hmm.
Statins made a difference in primary and secondary prevention, both. You know, if you look at the data and you compare men with women or elderly or men with younger folks, you know, like children, it doesn't hold up. But it does hold up in men. So even the familial hypercholesterolemia, where you have cholesterol as a 4, 5, or 600, would I use those in men and women? Sure, initially, because that's a genetic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But it only affects about 1 in 500 people in the country.
Right.
So that third guideline, which says treat LDLs over 190, I mean, there are loads of people with LDLs of 190, but again, you know, it's treating numbers. It's bad medicine.
Mm-hmm.
We need to treat patients. And I'm sure Johnny would agree with that.
Couldn't agree more.
Well,
you know, the other thing is, I think, and Steve pointed this out many times, and I think it's very much worth mentioning, that the modest benefit statins have, and let me repeat, when you look at the data, it's pretty darn modest. I mean, it's way less than most of us think it is. But the modest benefit that they have may well be due to the other things statins do besides lowering cholesterol. In fact, one of our colleagues has actually postulated that statins would be even more valuable if they didn't lower cholesterol. So what do they do besides lower cholesterol? Well, they're mildly anti-inflammatory.
There you go.
Most of us are just walking around with so much darn inflammation, any amount of anti-inflammatory help we can get is going to be good. And they also thin the blood a little bit. Now, those are good things. I happen to believe you can do most of those things with much more natural substances that don't have the side effect profile of statins, but I will definitely concede, as will Steve, that they do some good. You know, but I don't know that that is related to their ability to lower cholesterol. It may be related to their ability to slightly lower inflammation.
And they lower CoQ10. CoQ10 also is critical.
Oh, well, Steve, tell them about CoQ10.
Well, basically, the major reason why I jumped off the statin bandwagon back in 1993 was when I reviewed a paper coming out of Asia that CoQ10 levels were lowered by statin drugs. And, you know, back 20 years ago, I couldn't believe that. How could a drug be so good for the heart if it took out the major nutrient that the heart depended on for survival. So that's when I became sort of an alternative or a conventional physician, a statin physician in recovery, was when I read that article in 1993.
What's interesting is 1987, Carl Folkers, the father of CoQ10 at University of Texas, discovered that, and he worked on that. And he believed highly in that. And yet, and he worked for Merck. And in fact, Merck has a patent in 1987 to combine CoQ10 with statin drugs. And I think that's why they're afraid to market that very much. Because
Well, that patent is expired. I mean, that was good for the last few years, but it's over now.
Yeah, but how many people have died, or how many people have had muscle problems because they didn't know about it? I guess that's the problem. But we're going to get these books in our stores, and folks, you ought to get it, be a good present for somebody for Christmas time, The Great Cholesterol Myth. And we need to mention The Great Cholesterol Myth cookbook, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you wrote it, huh?
Yeah, well, we wrote that cookbook. It's interesting. It's not just a cookbook. It's also sort of a summary of the whole program and a way to put these concepts into practice.
Yeah.
And it's a justification and rationale why you find ingredients in the cookbook that you might be surprised by. For example, why we don't use a lot of vegetable oil and why we're not afraid of using healthy saturated fats in the recipe and why there's not a lot of grains in the recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful recipe book with amazing, delicious foods, but it also kind of explains the program very well and the rationale for the program.
Let food be your medicine, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Of course.
Okay. Well, both of y'all, it's been a great pleasure.
All right, thanks
so
much.
Thank you so much for all the information.
Thank you so much.
All right, Amy, I'll tell Drew I met you, okay?
Yes, tell him I said hello. Take care.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we are going to take a break here, and 390-1370. We'll be right back. Well, you know, that speaking of cardiology, that's the rhythm that you do when you do the heart saving pounding or whatever. Is that exactly? That's the whatever 2-3.
Oh,
whatever
really?
It is. Yeah,
interesting.
That's what, so that if you want to.
That's the rhythm you should have in your head.
So when you're saving somebody's life.
When you're doing CPR.
You're staying alive, staying alive. Right. Well, let's see, Sue Elliott. Sue?
Yes. Hello,
there we go.
Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
It's so much fun to talk to you because you're a power activator.
Why, like thank that. You. Yes, I am.
Did you coin that term or is that something that...
I did
common?
Coin that term.
Yeah. Well, you also coined a publication, didn't you, too?
I did. I created a magazine, a personal growth magazine called Law of Attraction.
And is that a mating type magazine?
Well, it can be. It does help people find the love of their lives. But it also has sections on body and health, and a section on work and career and money, and a section on empowerment. And then the relationship section isn't just about finding a relationship, but about finding more joy and peace in all of your relationships with coworkers and family and friends and loved ones.
Mm-hmm. So it's lovingmyself.com is the website to go to.
Yes, lovingmyself.com is my website for, it has information on Law of Attraction magazine and then also on my coaching practice, which is the Three Wishes coaching and power activation.
So let's talk about some steps in making your holidays the joy that they were intended to be.
Oh, yes. So. People find so many ways to make themselves crazy at the holidays. It seems like we torture ourselves over so many different things that we could really shift our self-talk around, shift the way we look at things and experience the holidays in a whole different way.
Well, isn't this something we torture ourselves? Like it's interesting that we just we can let somebody, like I like the term stress carrier. Some people are stress carriers. They give other people stress somehow.
Yeah.
Because they don't feel good, they're going to make sure you don't feel good, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that whole misery loves company thing. Yeah.
That's right. So what are some things, there's five things you talk about what you can do to make the holidays more joyful.
Yes. Well, the first thing you can do is to recognize that, you know, if you have those stress carriers in your family, mm-hmm. or any other characters who drive you crazy, you know, that's pretty typical. What we do that drives ourselves crazy is we compare our real families with that sort of Norman Rockwell painting of the mm-hmm. perfect family, you know, and
even the turkey looks just perfect.
Exactly, and it came out right on time, and everybody's right. sitting at the table and getting along. Nobody's
yep.
yelling,
laughing.
Nobody's crying. And yet, none of us, you know, had that kind of childhood, and I don't know anybody who's able to create that kind of situation in their own home, whether they're having the holidays at their house or going to a family member's house or even having friends over. You know, it just doesn't look like that ideal that we have in our heads. And as soon as we let go of trying to make it that, trying to be perfect, and comparing ourselves with some fictional, you know, fantasy version of what the holidays could be, we take a lot of the stress and a lot of the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Somehow I think the Leave It to Beaver type program they had. Remember that show? I don't know if you ever watched it or not.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, but, you know, it was always, you know, just, oh, everybody's just hunky-dory, you know. And my family wasn't quite that way.
No, mine either.
Yeah.
In fact, I found that it really helped to, my dad used to really upset me, and I found that it really helped when I finally realized that I wasn't going to change him, but that I could view those things he did that made me crazy as those cute, quirky things he was
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sort of, you know, when I'd feel myself getting all hot and upset when he would do that thing, I would just go, oh, he's doing that quirky, crazy thing. And I would kind of giggle, and mm-hmm. I would feel better. And that can really help around the holiday time when everybody starts showing their true colors or their worst colors.
Well, what I've found is that if I meet somebody that comes from that type of family, they're pretty boring. I don't know, just say they're boring. I don't know. But
like from
I like
perfect.
People, you know, that kind of tasted the fire, went through the fire a little bit, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So,
right.
so anyway, comparing our real families, and how about beating ourselves up over gaining weight at the holidays?
Oh, that's another thing that we do so well. We're so good at beating ourselves up. Have you noticed?
Over little stuff.
Yeah. And most of us have these beliefs around we gain weight at the holidays. And so, of course, we tend to make ourselves right when we have any kind of belief. So we'll go to a party where we don't feel entirely comfortable with the people, whether it's in-laws or, you know, going to your own office party or your spouse's work party. And we eat because, you know, these are comfort foods that people serve at the holidays. The cookies and the pie and the mashed potatoes and gravy. And we try to comfort ourselves with them when we're feeling uncomfortable.
And well, I feel compelled. Really I feel compelled to taste everybody's, you know, like.
Oh, you know, you're one of those being polite.
I am. All right. I'm trying to please. I try to please everybody, I guess. Right?
That's another really good way to make
it. It's a good
crazy.
Excuse in a way, I guess. Right?
It is very gracious. You know, people bring this stuff and they've worked hard to make it, or they've gone out and, you know, spent their money to buy it.
I don't want
to
disappoint
them. It's lovely to show that appreciation.
Right. Yeah. And I keep score even with cards. You know, I get cards from people, you know, some in-law, and oh, my goodness, I didn't send them a card. I guess I got to send. And next year I got to put them on a card list.
I don't do cards. I decided no cards because I just, to me, it was always stressful and it wasn't fun to make them. So I don't.
Or some people send you a list of what their kids did all year long, what they
did.
Yeah,
and that's
so
nice. And I always appreciate it when I receive it. But I think over the years you start receiving less when you don't give them yourself. I was thinking, though, maybe you could do – a lot of people are doing electronic, and that way you can maybe send a picture, but just
email
do it electronically.
Or something.
Yeah.
Well,
I love that you've unplugged from the feeling like you had to give people cards, send cards each year. You know, I think there's so much obligation around the holidays. Whether it's, you know, I got a card from those people, now I better send them one, or, you know, I got a gift from somebody, and now I better go run, you know, to the closet and find something to wrap up for them.
Yeah, right. And one reason why we're frustrated during this time is because we wind up standing in line a lot, don't we? We get upset.
Oh, we do, and we make ourselves so crazy when we're standing in line. You know, we're busy looking to see which line is fastest, and, oh, I picked the wrong line again, or, you know, that – why do they only have two clerks in the store? Don't they know it's the holidays? You know, there are three empty cash registers that people could be working at. Mm-hmm. And we get ourselves all wound up, and we're telling the story of there's not enough time and there's not enough help and there's, you know, and I've got so much to do. And we get ourselves so stressed out. And I would love for people to just relax. You know, we're going to stand in line. We're going to stand in line at the grocery store. We're going to stand in line when we're buying gifts for people. We're going to stand in line at the airport if we're traveling for the holidays. But we don't have to have that frantic, frenzied feeling while we're standing in line. Mm-hmm. We actually can take that time to, you know, just breathe deeply, just kind of center ourselves, just appreciate the holiday music if that works for you, look at the decorations, kind of unplug from all that stress that's going on around us and just enjoy a little moment of calm.
You know, to back up what you said, Black Friday was not so busy this year, but Cyber Monday was. So people are turning to buying online. So there's no lines, you know, when you when you buy online, right?
Yes. And, so, you know, you get away from the crowds and the stress. And, yeah, right. It does feel easier.
And then the other stress that you talk about is trying to buy the perfect gift for people, the perfect gift.
Oh, yes, as if there was such a thing as the perfect gift, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I've done this where I've gone into a store and I've looked at something and I thought, oh, he would really like this, but maybe there's something he'd like better. And so then I go to another store and another store, and I'm constantly second-guessing myself instead of, you know, giving a gift from the heart and doing the best I can to choose something that people would like and just knowing that I did it from, you know, from a loving space, a kindness, and not expecting anything in return, because we do also get really crazy when we give somebody something and they don't give us anything, or we give them something really, you know, expensive and they give us something that wasn't so expensive. We tend to tie ourselves in knots over all that keeping score and almost like testing each other with gift giving at the holidays.
Well, I found what I thought was a perfect gift at Costco the other day. It's a keychain with a breathalyzer, so you can for $22, and you can check and see if you can drive, or, you know, check your condition, so to
that
speak.
That feels loving to make sure you know people are going to be safe and take good care.
But then
of
I started thinking, yeah, but you give somebody. What are you trying to tell me? Is this a gag gift or what? You know, I don't drink, whatever.
So, interpret this how you will.
Right. Oh, this is just a gag gift. Don't worry about it. Right.
That's funny.
So, but you have a deal. I'm sorry, you wanted to ask
something? Oh, no. Yeah, that's what I was curious about. So this, it sounds like you have a program, Heartfelt Holidays, which is something that consists of audio clips that people can download and listen to try to help them navigate through all these holiday challenges with more ease.
Exactly. It's a set of 8 audios. They're very brief, so people can listen during a coffee break or while they're getting ready in the morning.
Or while they're waiting in line.
Exactly. Perfect while you're waiting in line. And they deal with crowds and family and food and parties and shopping and giving and receiving, because it seems to push all of our buttons around giving and receiving at this time of year. And then there's one really brief audio about 5 minutes long that I call Break Glass in Case of Emergency, that people can listen to before they go into any kind of challenging situation, whether they have to run into the mall on Christmas Eve or they're going to their in-laws' house for dinner. And it really helps to shift where you're feeling, you know.
Because humor.
Right.
Humor is the best. Break the glass, pull the handle.
And
did we lose her?
Nope.
Oh, good.
There you
are.
There we go.
And it looks like this is something someone can. Is it true that this is a free gift for our listeners?
It's my gift for you to help you feel more joy and ease and peace at the holidays. And you can download it from my website, lovingmyself.com/holidays.
Perfect. This is so great. Wow. Lots of wonderful gifts today.
It is. That's great that you're doing that. How long it will be available?
It'll be available through the new year, at least.
Oh, great.
Well, next time, would you have your dad on so we can thank him for what he gets to raise you so well?
I'll let him know that you said that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's good. We always enjoy talking. We got to do this again.
Yes, thank you so much. What a joy to connect with you.
Lovingmyself.com. Lovingmyself.com. You can't love yourself too much, can you? Well, I guess you could.
Like a podium. Podium people.
That's for the next show.
So where are you located?
I'm in Irvine, California.
Oh, nice. Okay. Hopefully it's a little warmer than it is here.
Yes, it's it was raining today, but now the sun's out. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
We have to fly out there, I guess, right?
Come on out.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, well, thanks again, and let's do this again, okay?
Yeah, thank you for your generous offer, and again, lovingmyself.com/holidays.
Yes, thank you both.
Yep. Thank you.
And everybody have a wonderful holiday season.
Okay, especially you, okay?
Thank you.
All right, okay. See you later. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a break. It is, let's see, we're actually pretty much on time. We got a little time for Dr. Sebring. We need to give him at least 30 or 45 minutes, but that's okay. He's going to
we'll scrape the surface.
Right. 390-1370. If you want any of these websites we give you that you missed, 390-1370. You can also go to our website, by the way, at peoplesrx.com. And we stream this, and you can pull up part of the shows that way, right?
That's right.
390-1370. 390-1370. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Let's Get Healthy with Bill Swale on the new 1370.
Well, Dr. Sebring, can you hold on? Can you be with us just for a second? Dr. Sebring? Yeah, Dr. Sebring, are you listening? Can
I
you
am.
Hear us? There we go. We got, I don't know why we didn't give you more time. We're going to, you know, we got to talk like they give these ads on TV for drugs, you know, the side effects, you know.
Sure, I can do that.
All right. No, we don't need to do that. We got a couple of things we need to talk about, little seminars coming up, right?
Yeah, just take a minute. And if anyone misses something, you can always go to our website, peoplesrx.com. Coming up at the Lakeline Wellness Center, we have smoking cessation and other New Year's resolutions, December 9th. That's a Monday at 7 p.m. On December 16th, Monday at 6 p.m., is anti-candida and paleo diet. And also December 16th at 7 p.m., back-to-back, is the trouble of thyroid. And a few community events to mention. Edible Austin's Eat, Drink, Local Week is December 7th through 14th. You can find more on their website, edibleaustin.com. And December 12th, there is a free health talk and free dinner on stress, hormones, and health at 6:30. Does not mention the location, but that, again, would be available on our website. And one other thing we want to mention is that all people's locations are collecting toys, toiletries, and non-perishable food item donations for the storehouse. And so that's a great charity through December 24th if you want to drop anything off. Wednesday, December 11th, from 5 to 9, 10,000 Villages is hosting a benefit. So 10 to 15% of any purchases, they have a lot of great handmade items from artisans in third world countries, and 10 to 15% of your purchases will go to VSA Texas, which is a nonprofit organization geared at helping create an arts-inspired, inclusive community of individuals with diverse abilities and individuals who are, I'd say, differently abled, disabled. And so, anyway, those are a few of the events. Again, just go to our website if you missed anything. And now we're happy to have Dr. Sebring with us.
So when is your seminar, Dr. Sebring?
I guess I'm going to have one.
Yeah. I know you can help people with diabetes and lots of problems, but we were – one of our interviews, and it's too bad we should have had you on there, but I think we'd still be talking. But Dr. Sinatra, Stephen Sinatra, was the great cholesterol myth.
Correct.
And so we might ask you
– Nice to have him on board, isn't it?
Oh, I hinted around, like, how do you keep your license, you know, like – But they recommend statin drugs a little bit, but it is interesting how he's doing it, and he's teaching, right?
Yeah, that surprised me at UConn. That's, you know, pretty conventional medical school. I'm just curious how he's received there, but he said there's still a lot of resistance to his ideas, but hopefully with time there'll be more.
He used the term pushback.
Yeah, pushback.
You know, right. I did my residency at University of Health Science Center in Tyler.
Okay.
Tyler, Texas. And we had a cardiologist there, Dr. Hector, mm-hmm. who was, I don't think he was head of cardiology, but he was probably kind of the lead cardiologist there. And it was a chest hospital, so we had about six different cardiologists in that small hospital. He talked about the fact that he did not accept this idea about cholesterol being the problem. And and he took a lot of flack for that, but not much, because he was former president of the American Heart Association.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. He had everybody, all his patients, he never prescribed statin drugs. He didn't worry about their cholesterol levels. And he put every one of them on CoQ10.
Oh, wow.
And that was back in the early 90s.
Hmm.
Isn't that amazing? That's good.
It really is.
Well, and they talked, too, about this program that they came out with a few weeks ago, you know, trying to get everybody, all these doctors to give more statin drugs, you know, looking at certain guidelines that were not really very accurate.
Right, and, the paint-by-numbers medicine approach.
Right, and so they caught them, you know, they on some misdirection they took and misinformation. Back on the last page in whatever it was that they were publishing. And they retracted it, but, you know, you they never did anything. You couldn't see it in the newspaper or anything. So they it made a big difference in the amount of statin drugs a doctor would write for it, the dosage. So,
well, there's so much, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is under such pressure to continue to make huge amounts of money like they have been. And they really have no new products, and they're not actually putting much of their money into the research anymore. They're spending considerably more these days on their advertising, and I don't know how much they commandeer the media, but it sure seems like an awful lot. I wonder what that cost is. I guess that's part of their advertising.
Yep, that's right.
But it's really disturbing, the hold that they have on information. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from Marcia Angell, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. And she said, the pharmaceutical industry owns the medical journals. Nothing gets published except what they approve. And that's what doctors hold up as their source. And unfortunately, it's their only source. Very few doctors read anything outside of their coveted journals, medical journals. They actually used to have some credibility. Now they have none. Dr. Mark Brown, president of the British Medical, or editor-in-chief of the British Medical Journal, who said that the medical journals exist for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to serve as an advertising arm for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
So that's what these doctors are dealing with.
Right. We just have a minute left. But what I want to talk about is what you would do, because we talked about checking C-reactive proteins and, of course, triglycerides. Rapid CT scans.
Right.
That's a 6-minute. They like that. But, you know, you're down there in Wembley. You can do all this, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we do that. I don't do rapid CTs using a CAT scan, but we certainly give orders for that, and they can have it done several places.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then for me, for heart disease, one of the things that I do is make sure that their diet is good. I put everybody on the paleo diet. You all know that. I tell everyone that. High-dose omega-3s, good bacteria for the intestinal tract. You want to reduce inflammation.
Well, anyway, they need to come see you. And let's give your phone number. Because I'm sorry, we have to cut this out.
My phone number is 847-5618, 847-5618. I'm about 35 minutes from downtown Austin. Or they can find me on the net at sebringclinic.com,
okay.
S-E-B-R-I-N-G, clinic.com.
Well, next time you're on, we'll give you 45 minutes. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, we definitely need more time.
Well, thank you, Dr. Steven.
Well, tell Dr. Sinatra I said hi, and ask him if he's still wrestling these days.
Okay, great.
Those are things we have in common. Bye-bye.
Right. Thanks again. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
We'll take a break for a week and see you next, I think Saturday after. I'm not sure when. Maybe Monday night. I don't know. But we'll see you soon. Okay. God bless you.
Have a great weekend.